Welcome to Investing in You, hosted by Eric Gemelli, the market forecaster who predicted the crash of September 11th in writing in his newspaper column. Eric is the author of the book, The Pattern of Life, How to Make Money in Any Market. Eric is speaking on a cruise this June and invites you to come along to learn the two patterns that predict every market turn. Now, with his irreverent look at markets and money, here's Investing in You.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Investing in You. This is Eric Gemelli. I'm your host, and right here is Christopher Smith.
Hello.
I think he's here.
Oh, I'm here.
Oh, good. I'm happy to say if you've been looking for the Two Ways to Make 2% show, that's been canceled. This is Investing in You, and we approach markets a little differently. You'll hear it later in this segment in the show. We're going to be talking to Lee Conrad. He's the group editor at Bank Investment Consultant. It's a group of magazines, and you'll be hearing from him about behavioral analysis, something that has really become popular over the last 10 years, but I find a lot of people that aren't in the profession aren't familiar with it. And many of you don't know that, Christopher Smith has many, many talents. He's extraordinarily bright. He has, as you've heard me talk about on the show, he has a profession of repairing computers. He keeps mine going. He's really good at it. Even remotely, he helps me out. But he also has a degree in psychology. And since we're talking about behavioral analysis, I wanted to spend more time, hearing from him. Chris, people are, my experience at least, is people are fundamentally irrational. So how rational can markets be?
Fundamentally emotional, I would say. We tend to intellectualize our decisions. I'm sure many of you out there are aware that when you make a purchasing decision, for example, it's bought on emotion. And more often than not, you're not actually buying the product as much as you're buying the marketing plan or the salesman.
I'm not sure people know that, because most new salespeople, for example, go out and do a mental download with people of how great this product is, and they're not really addressing the emotion.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is that the actual buying decision is made on the presentation of the salesman. I mean,
I think you're right that it's an emotional sale.
And then after they decide,
they justify.
They feel good about the sale. They feel good about that decision. Then they intellectualize or rationalize that decision to make them feel that it was the correct, intelligent decision to make.
Yeah. So if people are buying cars, not so much because of the analysis, but because they had an emotional response and then they go justify it. How does that affect markets then? Are people really acting, according to an economic theory, the things that they teach in all the classes?
Well, no. The vast majority of people out there that are behind the movements in the market aren't making rational decisions. They're not economic experts. They're not investment strategy experts. They're just people that are trying to make a little extra money or make a living on investing. So they have a little bit of training here and there. They might have some knowledge about economic theory, for example, or they might have heard, the buy and hold philosophy. Of course, you buy low and sell high. But it's very, very
selling
common.
High and buying low.
You can do that too, but that's
but most people don't know how to do that.
Right, right. And I find that I could be wrong in saying this, but I find that most people that don't really know what they're doing, they'll tend to wait too long. In other words, they'll see a market trend start to go up, and they'll start to get excited, but they're not really sure if they should make that purchase because they don't really know what's going on in the market. It appears random to most people. And so the market goes up and up, and they start getting more and more excited, and then they finally say, all right, I'm going to buy. And then a day later it turns, and they bought 2 or 3 days too late. And the same thing happens when they hold it.
And sometimes 2 or 3 years too late.
That's right.
So think back to when the market crashed down in 2009, was the turn. A lot of people just kind of waited and waited and waited.
Right.
There's stock that I actually bought down at the bottom that made over 1,000% on. But that's because of the patterns that we teach, that it was the end piece of the end piece of the end piece, and you knew it had to be turning soon and time to go long again.
So it seems that correct financial investment decisions are rational. Is that what you're saying? if you take emotion completely out of it and look at the patterns and try to build a hypothesis based on the patterns that you're seeing and try to make that right decision while keeping the emotion out of it.
It seems like there's a little, it sounds like there's a little bit of both. So there are correct financial principles, for instance, putting away 10% of your income. So I think the buy and hold things come because people can't, your average person isn't able to predict the market. So they're, you know, they have to come up with a strategy that works when they don't really understand. On the other hand, things are predictable. So then with at least a piece of your investing, you need to be, going long. I shouldn't say it that way. Strategizing the market up or down, because I make money both directions. In fact, I prefer when the market's falling, but then I go in with leverage, but I also do it very cautiously. You know, I have 10% stops, for example. In fact, in my sales agreement, it says I will guarantee that people will make money if they do three things, and what the most important is, you know, not take risk greater than 10%.
Do you think trading with stops takes some of that emotion out of it? It's kind of automated. Like if you have an online trading account, you can automatically set, well, I'm going to be committed and dedicated to selling at this point or at this percentage.
Right. It puts in a plan that you're accountable to, and it happens even if you change your mind, which keeps happening as markets fall. People are like, oh, no, the cross your fingers method doesn't work all that well.
No. Nor does the poke it with a stick method.
What is that one?
That's where you try a little bit here and there, and then you kind of, you know, you see the results, and then you kind of sit back and look and reassess, and then you poke it again with a stick, and then it really takes kind of consistent, dedicated effort.
I've not heard that one. Is that come out of Forbes magazine, or where'd you read that?
I can't remember.
No, I like it.
Yeah.
Let's see, where are we? So Chris, we have sound economic principles that have been proven to work over, you know, decades, but we also have the irrationality of people's decision making. How do you put the two together? For instance, the government thinks they're going to control this, and do they really?
Keynesian economics.
Yeah,
that's what you mean. Well, in my opinion, humbly, I don't think that is ever going to work. I mean, you got to have some degree of regulation in markets to, you know,
keep things honest. People will always act and react to stimulus, to rewards.
Always.
So if the government changes something, but how effective is it when people keep acting irrationally?
I'm not sure it is. I tend to agree with you. It's a bit of a stopgap. It has the potential to go too far because markets are a representation of the mass decisions of people, and people are inherently not rational. We like to think we are. We like to think that we make good decisions, but like we were saying earlier, we tend to make our decisions on emotion, and then after the fact, we justify the decisions that we made. Does that answer your question?
A little bit. It reminds me a little bit of politics, where I'm not sure both parties make decisions that are sometimes irrational, and then they justify it based on their paradigm.
Right.
So do we have the invisible hand theory? Is our markets always self-correcting, or, you know, to what extent does the government need to be in? Do you have, you know,
the invisible hand of economy?
Yeah.
That was something postulated by Adam Smith long, long time ago. The guy credited with creating the idea of capitalism, that an effective, well-moving market is really just a combination of individuals all acting in their self-interest. When you have the combination of all those individuals creating products or providing services with the intention of improving their own lives and improving their community, that then equates into what you would call the invisible hand of economy.
I think my mentor would agree with the basic tenet of that, that essentially when government gets involved, they might extend. For instance, we have seen a very long sustained rally then off of the bottom of March of 2009, but it's been through government intervention. And I think he would say, in the long run, it's going to make problems worse.
I agree.
So just like the bailouts, sometimes you have a short-term benefit, you know, say of the banks or the auto industry. So that looks like a good thing, but then it seems like there's a cost to be paid later.
Well, that's a perfect example. I mean, look at the auto manufacturers that were bailed out as opposed to the ones that weren't. I believe it's still the case that the ones that weren't are doing pretty much just fine, whereas the other ones are not.
Yeah, so it seems like really subsidy help. In general sometimes ruins the thing that they're trying to... Well, folks, stick around for a fascinating interview with Lee Conrad, editor of Bank Investment.
Michael Jordan says, get the fundamentals down and the level of everything you do will rise. Colorado Financial Education helps you learn more effective ways to think about your money, with the typical client saving at least $3,500 per year. We help people gain control of their money and get out of debt using the debt avalanche. We even have a money-back guarantee. Call us 303-548-9953. 303-548-9953.
You run a good business but need more customers. Your website with video is 50 times more likely to appear on the first page when Googled. Little Raven Pictures creates video for Discovery, PBS, and local businesses. See their work at littleravenpictures.com, then call 303-618-0096. For a short time only, Little Raven Pictures is offering a custom web video for $1,700. A 20-year history of professional work and happy clients makes them the right fit for your business. littleravenpictures.com, 303-618-0096.
Get the perfect fusion of performance, styling, and technology at Prestige Audi, where our passionate Audi staff will provide the quintessential car buying experience and put your pulse in drive. Discover why more people are leaving BMW, Mercedes-Benz, and Lexus for Audi than ever before.
Now lease a 2013 A4 Premium for $299 a month for 42 months. $58.92 due at signing. Visit PrestigeAudi.com for details.
Prestige Audi of Lakewood, the cradle of acceleration.
Les Madsen is the president of Premier Financial Services Group and has over 20 years of experience in the financial services industry. Les' focus has been in retirement planning, helping businesses establish retirement programs such as 401ks and simple IRAs. In working with individuals, Les's focus is not only with wealth accumulation, but distribution planning and Social Security integration. Les can be reached at 303-843-6211, 303-843-6211. Imagine feeling hungry and knowing your pantry and refrigerator are empty, but you have no money to buy food. Sadly, 1 in 7 Coloradans don't have to imagine and sometimes worry where they'll find their next meal. You can help. Please consider contributing volunteer time and funds to Food Bank of the Rockies. Every dollar Food Bank of the Rockies receives becomes 4 meals for our neighbors in need, and 96 cents of every dollar goes toward food distribution. Learn more at foodbankrockies.org. Every year we get excited about March Madness, but this year is not all about basketball. Millions of Americans are winning the game by taking advantage of our near record low interest rates. If you're in the market to purchase or refinance, now is the time to get off the sidelines. Call our Denver office, 303-242-5222, or apply online at GoSupremeLending.com. Our goal is to close your loan in 15 days or less. Supreme Lending, NMLS, ID 2129-14801. Gorham Drive, Dallas, Texas, 75254. Supreme Lending is an equal housing opportunity.
Hi, folks. We're back. This is Eric Jamelli, your host of Investing in You, along with Christopher Smith. And right now we have... Sorry, I just walked right on you, Chris. We have a guest today with... he's a publisher with Bank Investment Consultant. It's actually one of my favorite magazines. I think this is Lee Conrad. He's the group editor for this group. Hi, Lee. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me on the show.
You betcha. I really do like your magazine. I think page for page it's as good or better than some of the big ones out there like Forbes and Fortune. I do appreciate it. I think you have good articles. And that's
what
made me call to see if you would be available for an interview. In March you had a really good column about behavioral analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a new buzzword. What is behavioral analysis and why should investors care about it?
Well, it is kind of a new buzzword. It's been kicking around in academia for several decades, but it's just kind of breaking out in recent years into the mainstream. It is behavioral economics.
A Nobel Prize will do that, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's behavioral economics is the cross-section, really, between economics and psychology. It basically tries to infuse psychology more into economics than traditionally had been the case, and it really delves into the human aspect, the decision-making aspect, which is very often flawed and very often had been glossed over in traditional economics.
Yeah, in the earlier segment, we were talking about economic theory. So in a vacuum, people do certain, you know, maybe as a whole act in a predictable way, but we're all pretty, well, irrational sometimes. Isn't that what you're describing?
Yeah. We do definitely respond to incentives, you know, price being one of the biggest ones. But a lot of times the decisions that we make, sometimes it's just misinterpreted by somebody else. The decisions that somebody makes might be in response to an incentive that the other person had never considered. So their response may be classified or categorized as irrational, but in fact they are responding to an incentive, but they're not responding the way that had been expected.
Right. So, and that's one of the things people, like for instance, brokers always lament when a market's down 20 or 30% and their customers insist on selling, and they know they're reacting to fear, but they also can't sleep at night and stomach any more potential loss. Is that what you're describing?
Yeah, and that's been the case for a long time. Before behavioral economics really became a buzzword, people would zig when they should have zagged in terms of investing and in terms of cash flows. One of the columnists that we had in our recent issue that you just mentioned actually talked about that point and said that if somebody has to do has to sell at a certain point, even if it's a low point, even if you think they shouldn't sell and you're trying to convince them not to sell, but if that's what they have to do to sleep at night, then so be it. For them, that's what they should do, because for them, for their situation, that would be the more rational thing to do.
You know, when you said people zig when they should zag, I know that's referring to an old column that appeared in your publication. I'm speaking on a cruise this summer, and I've already put together the presentation, and that's part of it. People do the opposite. You know, people watch a stock go from 20 to 60, and they knew back at 20 they should have bought it, so they finally jump in at 60, and that seems to be the turning point.
Yeah, that often happens. And oftentimes it's the exact opposite. They'll buy a stock, and it'll fall, and they'll hold on to it. And in a certain respect, that actually is one of the cognitive biases, as they say in behavioral economics. There are certain biases, and one of them is called the endowment effect, and that helps explain why people will hold on to something, whether it's a stock or anything. Once they own it, once they have it, the value that they subscribe to it is greater than what they would have paid originally. And in their mind, all of a sudden, it's worth a lot more. So they can see the price falling, and they'll hold on to it long after they should.
Well, Chris is a psychologist. That's his degree, my co-host. Chris,
oh, okay.
how does that fit into your training?
Well, I just had a question. It seems that a lot of those mistakes made in the timing of making a buy or sell, in my opinion, a lot of that has to do with fear or apprehension. You don't really know what's going on with the markets. There's a little bit of herd mentality involved, and
yeah, right. Why are people buying Apple at $6.90? You know,
right, when they should have bought it 2 days ago when it was, you know.
Well, and then it bailed. It topped out at 700, and all they've had is pain for the last couple of months.
Right. So I think without having enough knowledge about market forces and about when to get in and when to get out, I think for the most part people just wait too long. They kind of drag their feet. Oh, I don't know if I should do this. I don't know if I should buy. And then they start seeing it go up and up and up. And before long, they hit a kind of mental critical mass. And then they have to get in because, you know, has to keep going up. And of course, what happens is it turns. And the same thing when it sells, they have a position, and then it drops and drops and drops, and they got to get out while they still have a few dollars left, and then it turns, and then if they just stayed in, they would have been fine. Would you agree with that, or do you think there are other factors as well?
Yeah, I do. I mean, on the individual level, the micro level, it's, there have been studies that say that people kind of live in their mind about 18 hours ahead of reality, and that's why people love mm-hmm. Fridays and they don't like Sundays, because in their mind they're already at the weekend. And they've done macro studies on a similar vein, talking about investors and basically what you just said, waiting too long, always lagging the ups and downs of the market. But when you always lag the ups and downs of the market, when you graph it out, it looks like you're doing the exact opposite. You're at a high when it's at a low. So to use the phrase again, it looks like you're zigging when you should zag.
You, in your article, let me see which one it was. It was this, the article that you wrote this year. You quoted Dennis Ruhl, who is with J.P. Morgan, saying that losses felt psychologically twice as much as gain. How does that impact?
Well, that's the whole loss aversion concept, and that was a big part of the Nobel Prize that you referenced by Daniel Kahneman. In, I believe, 2000, he was a psychiatrist that won the Nobel Prize in economics, and a big part of his research was loss aversion and really trying to quantify the concept of exactly what Dennis said, people hating losses twice as much as they enjoy the same gain. So that plays into a lot of buying and selling decisions. It makes an impact into the whole sunk cost issue. It makes us hold on to stocks even when we know we shouldn't, because we don't want to incur the loss. That's one of the biggest concepts within behavioral economics that investors need to overcome.
You know, it's funny. I always think of economics as a financial field, and I think when I think of finance, most people usually go to, you know, fundamental analysis. What's the economy doing? What are exports doing? What is the dollar doing compared to the yen and the euro? And that seems like a very cold and calculated thing. But everything we've talked about is really the whims of people.
It is. Well, when you talk about GDP and currency, that's really the macro, macroeconomics. But microeconomics, it is about people. It's. I remember the first definition, or the definition my first econ professor used, actually, for microeconomics was the study of human behavior and the allocation of scarce resources. And we study allocation and we studied scarce resources, but we didn't study human behavior, really. But that is a part of it. It's very much a decision-making discipline.
Yeah, we teach patterns here on this show, primarily technical analysis, and there's predictable patterns that it's the herd mentality that Chris was just talking about, that it's somewhat predictable that turns happen when they're supposed to. For instance, when we're recording this, gold had fallen $60, you know, in the day, so we're recording a week ahead of time, and it was predictable. I put it in my newsletter for people to expect that was going to happen. You know, so Lee, we're down to just a few seconds. Thank you for being willing to stick around. Folks, if you want to see more about this or listen to the archives, check it on market4caster.com. We'll be right back.
Did you know most home foreclosures could have been avoided with another $250 per month of income, and most bankruptcies wouldn't be necessary with just an extra $500 income per month? If you've been looking for a fun business that really works, where you can create a reliable residual income with a proven program that includes step-by-step training and support, and is a business you can work part-time or full-time, that is also risk-free because it has a money-back guarantee, then please call Rona Smith at 719-440-1286 for more information on how she created an extra $5,000 residual income per month working from home. That's 719-440-1286. Or check out her website at workingfromhomeandlovingit.com. That's working, no G, from home and loving it, no G, .com. Workingfromhomeandlovingit.com.
Thinking of buying or selling a home? Mary Strange with Keller Williams and the Strange team sells homes faster for more money. Lots of realtors say that, but Mary brings in a professional photographer and a professional stager when necessary. The result is homes sold in an average of 45 days. Listen to Dr. Dale Baird's testimony.
I have a very nice home built in the early 1970s on 0.6 acres, but had some problems and previous agents just couldn't get it sold. As a matter of fact, they pretty much threw their hands up and was recommending that I just get rid of the property, which meant I most likely would have had to come to the table with some cash. Luckily, I found Mary Strange of the Strange team. Not only did I not have to do expensive repairs, she found a nice young couple wanting to start a family that fell in love with the house. They purchased the house, but I actually made some money on it. Thank you, Mary. I can't thank you enough.
For a free market evaluation, call 303-668-5205. You have nothing to lose and everything to gain.
Hi, welcome to Lubin Latte. How can I help you?
There's a funny sound when I start my car. Can you check it out?
Oh, sure. Would you like a latte while you wait?
Sounds great. Wow, a real espresso bar. You don't ever mix up the coffee and the oil, do you?
only once, but the car ran great.
This is a great latte.
Oh, thanks. It's from a local roaster, Novo. We'll get a look at your car right away.
Lube and Latte, Denver's only full-service garage and espresso bar, located at 26th and Kipling. We are family-owned, ASE-certified, and do repairs, big and small, on all vehicles, makes, and models.
Well, we found the noise. Your belt was loose. We tightened it up and did a complimentary inspection. You'll probably need new front brakes in a few months, but otherwise, your car is good to go.
Thanks so much. You guys are great. I love this place.
You're going to love Lube and Latte, too. Make an appointment today at LubeandLatte.com. Lube and Latte. Cars and coffee done differently.
Did you know reverse mortgage specialists help seniors 62 and older put their home equity to its highest and best use? Over 10,000 people turn 62 every day. Reverse mortgages are one of the safest ways for that generation to help them utilize their stagnant equity or to buy homes better suited to their needs. As a financial advisor, Les Madsen can help seniors determine the suitability of several different vehicles that make seniors' financial life easier. Put your largest asset to work for you. If you know a senior homeowner who is struggling, Les can give educated guidance on many financial solutions. Call Les at 303-843-6211. That's 303-843-6211. Les doesn't sell reverse mortgages, so he can remain an objective third party. And best of all, there's no fee for his evaluation. Call Les at 303-843-6211. Hi, everybody. We're back with Lee Conrad. He's the editor of Bank Investment Consultant, and it's actually one of my favorite magazines. Lee, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, glad to have you. I'm looking at one of your recent publications. Let me look at the date. Again, this is out of March, and you quoted Joseph Coughlin from MIT's Age Lab saying that new thinking, even when validated with empirical evidence, takes years, if not decades, to integrate into mainstream. And we're talking about behavioral analysis, how kind of goofy people are. We've noticed for a decade now that it's the new norm that people call it, that markets tend to crash. We've seen that. Do you have any sense of whether people's thinking changes? I think I've read stuff from you saying that people maybe learn the lesson and then apply it to the wrong decade.
Yeah, they can. I mean, markets crashed well before behavioral economics. I mean, crashes used to be more steep and more severe than they are now. But new ideas in general, what he was getting at, I think, it was just new theories in whatever field just take such a long time to really take root and to really be accepted, especially when it comes to organizations. He and I have had conversations before, Joe Coughlin I'm referring to, where organizations are just inherently built on yesterday's ideas. The whole process, the whole procedure, the way they train, the way they go about business is often based on an old idea. So they are inherently reacting in a way that would have suited yesterday's problems instead of today's problems. So it does take a long time for truly new ideas to take hold.
I think the military is famous for that, too. It's been said they're always fighting the last war. oh, we should have done this. So now then they go buy, you know, equipment to deal with that problem instead of anticipating, which is tough to do. So do you happen to know, are there studies on this that, for instance, I referenced J.P. Morgan, you know, uses behavioral analysis. Are there, are people getting better results by trying to anticipate, you know, take into account how irrational people sometimes are?
Well, we had other writers also that I think really illustrated that point. We had both the issue you referred to and our previous year's behavioral issue. We had Barclays representatives answering questions for us and doing some writing for us, and they definitely have. They've had success with this. They've spent years coming up with a very detailed psychological survey that they give all of their clients. So they really try to delve into a lot of their true decision making, a lot of their true risk thresholds, and they say they've had success with that.
So that sounds like a practical application then for our listeners. For example, are there other ways that they, you know, could be using that themselves, or does it take professionals to, you know, apply this?
No, they can use it themselves. I mean, in a very broad sense, economics is about decision making, like we talked about before, and I think they could easily use these same concepts to improve their own decision making. And when it comes to investments, just simply having a written plan can oftentimes help them stay on track. Having a written plan as to when exactly they're going to sell and when exactly they're going to buy, so they don't get swayed by the popular sentiment, or they don't get swayed by a one-day crash or even a longer crash, but they really have in mind what they're going to do, they know what they're going to do, and they're not reacting emotionally. That's really kind of the key, is to try to take the emotion out of a decision that can get very emotional.
I think you're right. It makes me think of my kids, you know, just as teenagers. You know, we know in advance our kids are going to be teenagers and therefore emotional. And something a psychologist I heard had said was, you know, warn them ahead of time when they're 9 and 10 and 11. Say, look, there's going to be a few years here where your hormones rage. You never will have felt this before, and you're just going to feel crazy. But guess what? That's normal for this time. So I think the analogy, and my, I think it helped my kids. And then also then I was able to refer back to that discussion saying, hey, remember when we talked about this back when, you know, 5 years ago? You're experiencing it now, and it kind of takes that heat out. So if I hear you right, you're kind of saying planners and me, and just the average investor, if they know ahead of time, hey, I have a plan, it's solid, and remember we talked about this, there would be crashes and you'd feel nervous, but we still want to, you know, follow the plan. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a big part of an advisor's job, usually they'll tell you the first step is to get a plan down on paper, because so many people don't have that yet. But if you come up with some sort of plan, yeah, exactly. That's the way to stay on track.
Just a little aside, though, I see an article in last year's March of 2012 by Joe mm-hmm. Davis. He made a comment: market participants cannot accurately predict a tsunami. And by the way, I'm the forecaster that predicted 10 years in advance where Japan would be. I didn't know a tsunami was coming, but I find that these patterns, kind of like we're saying, people, you can expect people to act predictably irrational. I find that patterns just predict over and over something shows up. So I know that that's kind of a stretch for a lot of people, but I found that to be true.
This is part of your technical analysis, you mean?
Right. I follow these patterns, and then when the pattern runs out, I use patterns of fives and threes is what was taught to me by my mentor. In fact, I talked to him this morning. He was an old S&P floor trader, and literally he's made over $1 billion by following these patterns, and it's showing where the turns are. In fact, so I had predicted this gold fall that we're experiencing the day that we're recording. A week after people are hearing this, you know, gold fell $60 today, put that in my newsletter, and predicted the rally that the market was experiencing the past week. And personally, I played the long side of Goldman Sachs and made 73% this week in 6 days, including the weekend. So, but I don't recommend people do all of their money with that. I think people need, you know, the professionals to handle the bulk of the money that they have, You know, make that big hit with a little bit. Follow some very conservative rules. For instance, I recommend to people they never take a risk bigger than 10%, and that's only with a small piece of their trading, you know, trading funds at each time.
So, well, if you're making those kind of predictions and hitting them on the head, it sounds like you're the outlier, my friend.
Yeah, kind of have been doing that. The last couple of shows, we've had people come on who are making, you know, the guy who was on, was it a week or two ago, literally made $100,000 in a month just by following the predictions and the process that I teach. But I kind of want to stay, and actually these patterns rely on behavioral analysis too. It's just that people are squirrely, but in large enough numbers, we become kind of predictable, right? Take the Fibonacci's, for example. You know, why do turns happen right at 50% or 61.8%? But they seem to consistently do that.
Yeah, and there is a whole body of work talking that suggests that crowds do make very good decisions. There was a book by a writer in the New Yorker magazine, James Sarawecki, The Wisdom of Crowds, which is kind of a play on the madness of crowds. But according to his research, that a large enough crowd can make a better decision than even the smartest person in that crowd, that there's a certain collective intelligence that will make the right decision. I mean, the question is when? How long will it take? Markets do irrational things. Will it come back in 2 years or 4 years or after the great crash in 29? It took a whole generation for it to come back. So drawing that line as to when the long-term rationality might kick in is, I think, the pertinent question.
Yeah, I agree. One question I have is, you know, people often think, well, the market will always be back. So there's the psychology of it, but then there's also real-world events that are pushing things. You know, a war happens, and, of course, you know, gas prices at the commodity level are going to, you know, increase. So it seems like there's both. So I try to have a balanced approach where I consider fundamentals, but also then, you know, these patterns that I'm talking about, as well as, you know, people's decisions.
Yeah, what you're describing, I think, are what an economics class would call the external shocks, the things that you just can't predict, like energy or a war. But those things, despite all of your theory and analysis on the economy, yeah, those things have a major impact.
Right. Well, we have about a minute left. Any final thoughts that you have that you want to leave with us?
Well, it's just that behavioral economics or behavioral finance, I think, is an important part of people's portfolios, but it is being usually thought of these days as being a complement to traditional economics as opposed to an outright replacement. But I do think it has important conclusions and important concepts that should be remembered, and people should bear them in mind.
Yeah, it's a lot to juggle. Just like the traditional format has been, you know, 60% stocks and 40% bonds, the traditional format has been use fundamental analysis. And
right.
Then people are starting to use more and more technical analysis. And then now we're adding in behavioral analysis. So anyway, Lee Conrad, editor of Bank Investment Consultant, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
It's been a fun interview. Thanks for sticking around a second segment. That wasn't planned. So we appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Get the perfect fusion of performance, styling, and technology at Prestige Audi, where our passionate Audi staff will provide the quintessential car buying experience and put your pulse in drive. Discover why more people are leaving BMW, Mercedes-Benz, and Lexus for Audi than ever before.
Now lease a 2013 A4 Premium for $299 a month for 42 months. $58.92, do it signing. Visit PrestigeAudi.com for details.
Prestige Audi of Lakewood, the cradle of acceleration.
Michael Jordan says, get the fundamentals down and the level of everything you do will rise. Colorado Financial Education helps you learn more effective ways to think about your money, with a typical client saving at least $3,500 per year. We help people gain control of their money and get out of debt using the debt avalanche. We even have a money-back guarantee. Call us 303-548-9953. 303-548-9953.
You run a good business, but need more customers. Your website with video is 50 times more likely to appear on the first page when Googled. Little Raven Pictures creates video for Discovery, PBS, and local businesses. See their work at littleravenpictures.com. Then call 303-618-0096. For a short time only, Little Raven Pictures is offering a custom web video for $1,700. A 20-year history of professional work and happy clients makes them the right fit for your business. littleravenpictures.com. 303-618-0096.
Les Madsen is the president of Premier Financial Services Group and has over 20 years of experience in the financial services industry. Les' focus has been in retirement planning, helping businesses establish retirement programs such as 401ks and simple IRAs. In working with individuals, Les' focus is not only with wealth accumulation, but distribution planning and Social Security integration. Les can be reached at 303-843-6211, 303-843-6211.
You've heard the testimonials on this show, ordinary people making 10 times what mutual funds make. In his 72-page ebook, Eric Gemelli, the market forecaster who predicted the market crash of September 11th, in his syndicated newspaper column, teaches you the philosophy and techniques of professional floor traders. Follow the link on marketforecaster.com. That's market, the number four, caster.com.
Every year we get excited about March Madness, but this year is not all about basketball. Millions of Americans are winning the game by taking advantage of our near record low interest rates. If you're in the market to purchase or refinance, now is the time to get off the sidelines. Call our Denver office, 303-242-5222, or apply online at GoSupremeLending.com. Our goal is to close your loan in 15 days or less. Supreme Lending, NMLS, ID 2129-14801. Quorum Drive, Dallas, Texas, 75254. Supreme Lending is an equal housing opportunity.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. We were talking to Lee Conrad, editor of Bank Investment Consultant, in the last two segments, and we've been discussing behavioral analysis, kind of a new science. He referenced an article, a discussion with somebody at Barclays. It's Greg Davis. He has a PhD and is a managing director of quantitative investment philosophy over there. So, and one of the things that came out of that interview was that humans tend to aim for perfection, but they say in the article, bet against the obvious and powerful forces of human fallibility. So there is a balance of both science that goes into investing, and that's what we were talking about in the first segment, along with the fallibility of humans, the kind of the emotional aspects that come up. And we were talking with Chris because he's got a degree in psychology, the co-host here, Chris. And Chris, sometimes this seems like it should be cut and dried. It's, you know, numbers are clear, aren't they? You know, math
absolutely.
Is
absolutely math is a completely rational. Logical science. Numbers, 2 + 2 is always going to equal 4, no matter how you look at it.
So what happens then when
you're learning new math?
Yeah, exactly. Why do we have these cycles of huge dips then?
Well, markets are basically a representation of numbers. And so, like I said, you would assume that they would behave on completely logical principles because you're looking at numbers and math and whatnot. But what they also are is an expression of the results of emotional decisions. People are buying and selling different investments based on whether or not they like a company, they feel that it's a good choice to make, the company is strong, the industry is strong. Or they're working on technical analysis, which is more about what you do. But those decisions that they make are still going to be emotional. How long should they wait before they get into a position that seems like it's doing good?
How long should they wait
to get out before it completely crashes?
Right. The hard thing, I think, for people is many people have proven to themselves that they have gut instincts that are good. Mm-hmm. So they've watched stocks, go up and up and up that they knew that they should have gotten into. However, then that fear cycle sometimes takes over too, so there's a balance there. And it reminds me of a comic that I saw. It's three guys sitting in an airport, and they're watching the commentator on the TV screen, and whatever news was given, one has a bubble above his head thinking that he should buy. One has a bubble above his head thinking he should hold, and another thinks he should sell. And that's just how markets work, that there's this ebb and flow of people making individual decisions based on their own situation.
You had come up with a key phrase for that a while back. What was that about, how the Dow is really a representation of the economics of the totality of...
Well, I think we are like Rome. Oh, yeah, I think that we're like Rome, and that the Dow does guide. Just it's good. It's the best measure we have of how we're doing here in America, at least.
That's scary.
Well, it's inflated. So what does that tell you? You know, this $85 billion that we're creating every single month. You're right. It's bloated. So maybe it is an accurate. But I forget the phrase that you're looking for.
Something along the lines of the stock market being the heartbeat of God. That's what it was.
Oh, so just like we see this pattern in grains, and a drought will show up or the rain show up when the pattern shows that it's ready for a turn. Yeah, we kind of see actually. If I look at the S&P over like the past 20 years, it looks to me like the heartbeat of a dying victim. You know, there's a crash, and they resuscitate, and another crash, and they resuscitate. So that's not a hint at what's coming. It's just an observation of what the chart looks like. So, but you have a mix in populations of contrarians, people who almost always think it should be doing the opposite of what it's doing. And then you have the sheep who are just always following. How does zeitgeist, you know, the spirit of the times, the how does that play into all this?
Zeitgeist. Well, I'm not sure what you mean.
So another definition of it is just it's the spirit, the collective thought of people. For instance,
the current paradigm.
A year ago, nobody even to think about getting sweeping gun bans in Colorado would have been unthinkable, and then, you know, it just happened.
Right. Or 30 years ago, it was pretty much established that you would work for a single company for the rest of your life, get a gold watch, and then retire.
Right. That's so changed. Different models, different
so
methods.
The spirit has changed. I see what you mean now.
So we've seen, and that goes back to the comment that I made with Lee about how, you know, it takes so long for people to change their thinking, even in the face of empirical evidence. So that's what we've, the last decade has been, I think, showing that maybe we need a new paradigm. At least the one that we have is incomplete. In fact,
well, buy and hold certainly doesn't work anymore.
Well, and Greenspan had felt, I'm trying to find the article here. Greenspan had commented that, you know, really the assumptions that we've been working around at least aren't complete and maybe are failed. So we do need to at least include this behavioral analysis in. It's just that it doesn't seem, the numbers of how the dollar is doing compared to the euro is more concrete. People like that math. Because, you know, it seems like it's reliable, whereas behavioral analysis, it seems more fluff. It's significant, but it's harder to wrap our hands around.
That's true.
So as a psychologist, you know, just how do you see this discipline of behavioral analysis affecting, investing?
Well, as a typical investor, it's definitely something that you want to get privy to. It is the case, at least in my very humble opinion, that, like I said a couple times during this, during today's show, decisions are made based on emotion. So I think if you accept that and acknowledge that and be aware of that when you're investing, and then learn what are some of those principles in behavioral finance, you're going to be a lot better off, because you're not going to be as tied to or at the behest of your emotions.
No, that makes sense. So if people are always looking for that bull market, it seems to be what we're trained for. In fact, I've heard many brokers say, well, there's always a new high coming. Well, that's not true. Look at Japan, look at Spain, look at Rome, look at England, Asia. You know, how many Huns do we have ruling the world right now? So there's tops and then there's turns. Look at the crime rate in New York in the 90s. It was at an all-time high and people thought it was just going to get worse. You know, I have an old quote that, you know, drugs, guns, and gangs was what people thought about in New York. And it people act and then they react. So I think,
and they're almost always about 5-10 years behind.
Right.
Like you were saying during Lee's interview, armies are always using the technology from the
exactly
lessons from the prior war.
So one thing we can, I think, take home from this is to look for the opposite, that at times, even if it's just a short-term drop, well, that presents an opportunity to, A, make money as it falls, the market falls, but, B, maybe sell while you have a profit. I think people have to look for that. So, folks, this has been a really good show. I think if you might want to go back and listen to it again, I keep an archive of the shows on my website at market4caster.com, and it's under the audio tab. Also, we have some really good show sponsors, and anytime you know, miss their number, but also looking back, our condolences go out to Lee Les right now. He's the financial planner. His mom has been passing away up in Minnesota. So when he gets back, you know, he's got some good ways of helping you save on taxes too. An investment that saves something like 90% of what gets put into it is a tax deduction. So that's a big help. So you can find him on Market, the number 4. So tune in next week. We're going to talk to Dr. Charles Benbrook from Washington State University. He's a scientist there and going to inform us about, get rid of some of the hype about GMOs. So thanks for being with us today. Thank you, Christopher, as always.
You bet.
And remember, this is your source to learn how to make above average returns. Thanks for being here.
You've been listening to Investing in You with your host, Eric Jamelli and Christopher Smith. Investing in You is a show dedicated to educating and informing the investing public. The ideas and opinions stated on the show are for informational purposes only. Investing in You, Eric Jamelli, and Christopher Smith are not investment advisors or broker-dealers. We cannot and do not give investment advice. The stock market carries risk. You could lose some or all of your investment. We suggest you contact your personal investment representative or call Les Madsen to discuss suitability for your individual investment. Contact information for Les and all of our show sponsors is on market4caster.com. Thanks for listening.